The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guests on Off the Shelf are Tom Howder. Tom is the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Assisted Acquisition Services at GSA's Federal Acquisition Service. And Chris Hamm, he is the Director of FedSIM within the Office of Assisted Services. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to be here.
Well, I'm looking. Don't sound so enthused, Chris. All right. Let's get into the show here. I know, because there's a great story to tell here about assisted services and FedSIM and the support you provide to customer agencies, which I think is, you know, with what we see a lot going on with the executive orders and things along those lines, people looking for shared services models to leverage across the federal government. I think you guys are a great example of that. So, you know, Tom, I'm just going to open it up to you. And, you know, what is the Office of Assisted Acquisition Services?
Well, it does what it says. It's we're assisted acquisition services. But, you know, take a step further back. We exist really to enable the mission of our clients. We work with so many very important clients who are trying to do great things in government, whether it's things such as continuous diagnostics and mitigation for DHS, whether it's the JIDO organization and DOD, or whether it's putting in place the facilities for the CDC where they can put their stockpiles and get them ready if there's ever an emergency need in the government. So we're a function for them. They can come to us for assisted acquisitions. And they come to us for a lot of different reasons. They may come because they don't have an acquisition shop that's available to them, or they may come to us because they've used us before and they like what we do, or they come to us because it's an extremely complex and large acquisition, which we have a specialty in there. So we are a nationwide organization, worldwide reach. We have 12 different client support centers. 11 of those centers are in the regional offices of GSA. And then we have a national office, the FedSIM organization, which Chris Hamm is the director of. Last year, we did about $4.8 billion in revenue. This year, we'll probably do more than that, probably about $5 billion. And
those are government obligations, right, yeah, to support the customer, right?
That is correct, yeah. Yes. So, and I'll turn it over to Chris to talk specifically about what the FedSIM operation does.
So, similar to Tom here, the title of it being assisted acquisition, FedSIM is primarily known for doing the large niche programs, particularly around information technology for an entire federal civilian agency or for DOD. It has morphed in the last couple of years to also include much more professional services work. It's a reaction to the spending in the market flowing under the large contract vehicles like Alliant and now OASIS. We're seeing a lot of requirements throughout the Department of Defense and Homeland Security where the solution is a technology aspect and a people aspect where there's uncertainty in the future. So you're getting very, very large dollars under orders under existing contracts where we'll work with the programs and with the contract activities to build a larger contract to help them deliver.
Right. So, Chris, can you talk a little bit about operationally what you guys do? I know a customer comes to you, they have to sign an interagency agreement, right? And what are the exact services sort of that you provide across a procurement cycle?
So I like to make an analogy. In your day-to-day life, whenever you're buying something, you don't need a lot of help. You know, you go down, buy a cup of coffee.
Speak for yourself there, Chris.
Yeah. You can handle, you know, the basic transactional stuff of your life. And if, you know, you can get points on your credit card, however you need to do it. But whenever you do large, complicated things, you seek out the advice of, you know, agents. If you're going to buy a house, you're going to go find somebody who knows the neighborhood, knows the sellers, knows the builders, and knows all the mechanical aspects of it. When you're working on large opportunities, FedSIM does that kind of work frequently. You know, we do dozens of massive contract awards every year, and we know how to structure contractual arrangements with large companies to drive outcome-based performance, doing innovative contracting types. where if somebody has a legacy infrastructure, you know, they've got a bunch of servers or a mainframe and an old language, and they've never done agile development, they've never hosted anything in the cloud. We do that all the time, so we know how to structure those arrangements to move them out of legacy infrastructure into a modern environment, and then incentivize the contractors to make sure that they're delivering all of the information properly. And so it's the seeking agents whenever you need to do something that is new and innovative.
Right, and ours is, it sounds like a lot of that work is, if it's outcome based, it sort of is a performance, you know, performance based sort of statements of work or that sort of thing.
Yeah,
nearly
every solicitation is performance based, sometimes with a statement of objectives, mm-hmm. and then corresponding service level agreements that are proposed back in response.
Right, and Tom, that's FedSim, and they,
right.
You know, as Chris mentioned, they concentrate on large procurements over $100 million. And we'll talk maybe a little bit about FedSim Express at some point and what that is. When you look at the rest of AAS in the regions, that sort of thing, can you talk a little bit about, what level of service they're providing, what types of transactions they're working on?
Sure. So when you look across the AAS enterprise, last year we did about 1,000 different projects, 1,000 different orders. And some of them are very large and complex. FedSim specializes in those. And some of our regions do some too. They don't necessarily have the same bandwidth as FedSim, so they can't do as many of these very large, complex acquisitions, but they have that expertise out there as well. We have a realization, however, that it's not just those customers with the very largest acquisitions that need assistance. It's those with a whole range of requirements. And so we do requirements across, even down to $1 million, $1 million to $100 million, up to $1 billion in some cases with FedSim, because we want to make sure that we fulfill the needs of a very broad swath of clientele. And while it's nice to have that expertise focusing on the very large and very complex, we also want to have those requirements met for other customers. And so you'll typically see across the spectrum, certain of our geographic locations may have different expertises. Some of them may be able to focus on facilities maintenance and management, as an example. Some of them may have expertise in cost contracting, as an example. Some of them focus on smaller acquisitions. Some of them focus on larger acquisitions.
And then when a customer comes to you based on what they're looking for, you direct them to the right sort of center of expertise?
Yeah, so we have a whole host of different ways into the AAS organization. Typically, they'll come in either through a FedSim door or one of the regional doors. And oftentimes, the requirement will be fulfilled right there at that center that they come to. However, if a given client support center doesn't have the capacity or the skills, we have behind the scenes what we call a facilitation framework. And that's an actually organized way of transferring projects from one location to another based on demand, based upon capability, or other criteria. And that way, somewhere in the enterprise, we can meet the customer's expectations.
Right. So, and another question, you've had steady growth, right, over the last, that's a marker. I'm a market guy. That's a marker of success, that you are growing as an organization in terms of the support you're providing to customer agencies.
That's a very true statement. For the last several years, we have had a continuous steady growth around 10%. And so I think it's a pretty healthy
clip.
People
would be envious. A lot of folks would be envious.
Yeah, a lot of people would be envious
growth
of that.
Yeah.
But I think it shows that what the pent-up demand is out there, that we can continue to grow like that. I don't think we've even scratched the surface, quite frankly. There's so many customers that I think if they could come to us, they would come to us. And we've been trying to scale up to meet those demands.
And Chris, is DoD your biggest customer?
By far. Yeah. About 70% of our contracts are for DoD, and then Homeland would be another large component of that. Civilian market, there's only so many entire agencies where you can do outsourcing.
Sure.
The federal spend is going to reflect where most of our contracts are.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, guys? We're already up on the first break. My guests today are Tom Howder. He is the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Assisted Acquisition Service at the Federal Acquisition Service, GSA, and Chris Pham. Chris is the director of FedSim within AAS. And when we come back, we'll talk a bit more about the value add that AAS and FedSim provide to customer agencies, and talk about some of the ongoing key initiatives that you guys are focusing on in terms of increasing value to customer agencies. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Tom Howder. Tom is the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Assisted Acquisition Services at GSA, and Chris Hamm, who is the Director of FedSIM at AAS. And guys, when we took the break, we'd gotten into what you got, your mission, what you provide in services, and Chris, you know, when you're supporting the customers, I think one of the things that I've heard you say many times is that, you know, you're getting more than just the procurement operations. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So whenever anybody is looking to get support through AAS or in FedSIM particularly, the first question is always, like, can you make my award date? I have a contract that is expiring somewhere, sometime, right. And, you know, I got to get it done because the most important thing is I need to get my mission done, and so there's people doing something for me. So the requirement is always, I got to get a contract award. Throughout government, there is no one that has ever entered the government who sought to be an acquisition professional. They always sought to be somebody running a program, or they were a lawyer and they went to law school and to make sure that it was all correct. But there's no major in government or in college called contracting. And yet it's the centerpiece of the interaction for all service delivery inside of the government. And so somebody somewhere wants to do something, but there's this process. You know, there's a whole book of regulations and there's a bunch of iterative steps. And for some reason throughout the government, that process can be lengthy. And so there's an unmet expectation here you know, I'm trying to do something. You have to write a bunch of things. You have to have people who know how to do it. And so the acquisition phase for some people could be years. We shrink that down to months. We do the contractually compliant aspects to make sure that you establish a good relationship with a supplier. But then once it's awarded, the most important part starts.
Right.
It's not the contract document. It's not the dollar amount. It's the delivery. It's the, did you get the thing that you paid for, and are we using taxpayer funds properly? So the best thing you get out of AAS isn't the contract award. It's the contract award administration. It's the project management. It's the financial management. So all of the customer money comes in, and we're tracking it to the penny, making sure that it goes for the outcome, that we get the deliverable, that everything is recorded properly in the contract file, and that we're doing the CPARS reports on it, the FPDS entries, all of the mechanical aspects that make contracting work so that you're not getting audit reports and IG investigations. That's the service that you get out of AAS and FedSIM, is that all of it is delivered to what you originally wanted to do, not that you got a contract award.
That's where we actually get all of our repeat business from. You know, we don't go out and really actively market for business. We have lots of satisfied clients who stick with us. And oftentimes, they'll go to different agencies. And when they get to the other agency, they'll come back to us because they remember the experience that they had with us, especially in that post-war environment. And so it becomes a virtuous cycle for us. And it's all word of mouth. And that's really the way we've been
growing.
That's
often the best advertising there is, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, those guys are good. It's interesting that, Chris, you mentioned, and I think you're absolutely correct, that, you know, the sexy part is awarding the contract. The real nuts and bolts is actually delivering on performance, and whether that's the contractor and the government working together. Do you see that as a big, you know, gap on the federal side? I mean, it seems to me, and I've been doing this for 20 years, everybody wants to talk about the award side. Nobody wants to talk about, or at least the policymakers, whatever you hear. There's lip service given to it, but really focusing on that actually contract administration function and ensuring contract performance, and that, you know, that's a management issue. Do you see that out there?
I also think it's structural. The nature of, you know, organic contracting in each agency or service is there's an assigned contracting function and then there's an assigned program office. And so you measure them differently. You measure the acquisition function based on the awards, and you measure the programs. The programs are overall effective. There's not a coordinating activity between the program and the acquisition to make sure that each of the programs are being effective unless they fail. And that's when you get into like stat reviews, you get on watch lists. But there's not an enduring function that forces those two parties and the contractor to deliver. And so that's the thing that would be properly measured to make sure I gave you the money, you awarded the contract, and then you got what you bought. If you look at IT projects in particular, most large IT implementations are known for failure. You look at the Gartner studies and they say that, you know,
right,
we don't
sure.
know what the future would be, and most projects end up not being successful because we can't imagine what the future will be. If you were to properly resource and provide oversight and deliver it, then you get a much more positive outcome. And so our measurable success on IT projects speaks for itself. We don't have projects that are canceled. Whenever the technology shifts or the requirement shift, we build contractual arrangements that pivot so that you can still execute based on whatever the new direction is of the government.
Right. Tom, so in this area, you know, in the IT area, is most of your work, are we talking about a lot of it related to legacy, you know, maintaining legacy systems or moving to that next iteration, you know, modernization of IT in terms of the projects AAS works on?
Well, I think we see both of those, Roger. Really, though, a trend that we're seeing is not so much a focus on IT as professional services. So we started out as an organization, 100% of our requirements were IT,
right.
Probably about,
yeah, I remember
about
that.
10 years
yeah.
ago. That's all we did.
Yeah.
However, in the last few years, and especially since the award of OASIS, we've seen customers come to us really more for professional services. So at this point, I think it's probably about 50% IT, 50% professional services. So that's really where...
That's a big change.
It's right. a huge change, and that's where we see it continuing to move as well.
Let me tell you a little bit more about how that has impacted government service delivery, particularly for the Department of Defense. Most of those contracts that prior to OASIS, a requirement would say, I need to have 24 FTE. They need to be labor category X, and they need to do job Y. Very
sure.
statement of work oriented
right.
old government style
directive.
Contracting.
Yeah.
So OASIS gets awarded. FedSIM and AAS will do large acquisitions for them. And the first thing we do is provide that management consulting service to say, no, you don't need 24 FTE. That's what you have. What's your outcome? What are you trying to accomplish? And is it people or is it stuff or is it a solution? And so we'll revise the statement of work and then motivate the contractor based on an SLA or an award fee or incentive fee to drive at that outcome. Suddenly you start lowering the cost, because when you're prescriptive on people, particularly with clearances,
right.
the same people
sure.
who were there stay over and over and over again. But when you give them a better contractual design, the cost lowers and you get the outcome. And suddenly you don't care whether or not it's X number of people.
Right. So with the growth of professional services, Tom, are you guys, you know, there's Alliant, which is IT, right? And OASIS, which is professional services. How, you know, if you've got a, do people come to you with projects that have both, that a mix of them? And how do you handle those?
Well, you know, first of all, I want to say that we do use Alliant and OASIS. I think we're the largest customer both on Alliant and OASIS. So what we really have to do, Roger, is sit down with the client and see where it really fits best. We really have to understand the requirements, because sometimes there's a fine line. Is it an IT project with some professional services, or is it a professional services project with some IT? So we'll have to work with the client and make a judgment call and see where it'll fall. But we're contract agnostic. We'll use whichever one we believe meets the requirement for the client the best.
Yeah, the contractors are overlap on the vehicles, so there's not
sure.
a lot of divergence
mm-hmm.
in terms of suppliers. The middle space seems to be engineering. If it's information technology engineering, it leans towards Alliant, and if it's on a tank, it leans towards OASIS, but
right.
that's the primary area of overlap.
Right, and are you seeing trends with regard to use of small businesses?
There's a dramatic uptick in the use of OASIS small business, particularly out of the MOUs that were signed. The proactive efforts out of the OASIS program to go get services to sign MOUs.
Right, like the Air Force, right?
It validated right. The vehicle. And so not only just on the AAS side, but also on the customer side, you're seeing a lot more dollars flowing to small business under OASIS small business.
Right. So, and you guys, you know what? We're already just about on the break. One thing I wanted to, and I'll give Tom a chance to start, just what is, I've heard this FedSIM Express. What is that?
We'll just call it Express.
Express.
Yes, just
oh, okay.
Express.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to realize some efficiencies, and we want to be able to get faster to market, get the acquisitions through quicker. We want to reduce our PALT time, just as any acquisition shop wants to do. And so with the Express program, and this is an internal facing program, it's not externally facing, we're going to be looking at consistency and to a degree standardization. We're going to be looking at the various dollars thresholds that are in the FAR and seeing if we can make default decision making, quicker decision making based upon where something lies like that. And so right now we approach every project individually as a piecemeal project on its own. With the Express program, we're hoping that if we can, here's a technical word, bucketize things, perhaps we can use that, leverage that capability to speed up the acquisition process.
Okay. And I have a follow-up question about Express when we get back from the break. My guests today are Tom Howder, he's Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Assisted Acquisition Services, and Chris Hamm is Director of FedSIM from the Federal Acquisition Service, GSA. And when we come back, I'll ask you, where's the balance between standardization and maintaining that flexibility? You are listening to Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Tom Howder. He's the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Assisted Acquisition Services at FAS, and Chris Hamm, who's the Director of FedSIM within the AAS organization. And guys, I posed the question before we made the break, so you had plenty of time to think about it. And so I'll just ask it again. Express, Tom, when you described it, it's finding those efficiencies through some standardization of processes. And I get that a lot. And the follow-on question of that is, how do you maintain that balance if you're trying to standardize and increase efficiencies while at the same time maintaining that excellence in terms of customization you can do for customers? I'll just either guy, both sure. You guys can attack it. I don't care.
So one thing that's interesting is when you pull up an awarded contract, you know, throughout the federal government, like the format will be different every single time you open it up. The what's included in it, you know, what are the standard clauses? Where's the pricing? There is no consistency if you were to just randomly pull out two different contracts anywhere. So when you start talking about standardization, you're not talking about saying a prescriptive one size fits all thing, but there are foundational elements where you could drive consistency. One thing that FedSIM has been very, very successful at is large cost contracting orders under Alliant and Oasis. So we've templatized the mechanical process for doing that. There's a Microsoft project schedule that has a Gantt chart that says these activities takes X amount of time using this format. How you do it within that is based on the requirement. So you can do idiosyncrasy of the scope, the sure. evaluation methodologies, but the form you're using and the system that your buttons you're hitting, that should be the same. When I go to a bank here and I go to a bank in California, my card goes in the machine the same way and the money comes out the same way because that's my expectation. The government should do the same thing. And so Express is the basic delivery of not just large cost awards, but any sort of ordering procedure that we're going to do, whether it's an 8A award or a GSA schedule, commodities award, we could do all of the processes the same and then make sure that we're using the system the same. And then you do the warranted contracting officer making decisions on what's the best way within that construct.
And so if I go back historically and I look at AAS, we have, of course, the FedSIM organization, which was a national organization, and we also have the 11 regions, and they were all kind of stovepipe for a long time. So we've been working very hard for the last several years to operate more like an enterprise rather than 12 independent franchises. And so I mentioned the facilitation framework earlier, the passing of projects between these different centers. So what we're finding as we're doing this and refining this is there's just slight variations between each of these locations, even now, even though we've worked very hard towards creating this enterprise approach. And so we do need some kind of consistency if we're going to be able to smoothly transition those projects between these different locations. And so I think that's really touching upon what Chris is mentioning here in terms of you want that similar outcome regardless of where you come in the door and where it goes out the door.
And the benefit to the government is obvious. Right. If you're doing a large acquisition and industry knows how to respond, then it lowers their cost. And so it lowers the ultimate price of the contract. And so if you're doing a large acquisition and there's uncertainty, then you could get into protests, then you could get into delayed missions. So every time you're getting something that's going to be $100 billion or $100 million that AS does, you should be seeing the same template and have the same expectations.
Right.
And then we want to do that for all dollar thresholds for all types of acquisitions.
Right. Yeah. Uncertainty definitely increases risk and costs for everybody. Absolutely. So, Tom, I have to pick up on something that, I heard you say, you know, as a, someone who worked at GSA. I like that. Just really struck me the idea of not being, you know, 12 different franchises and one, you know, enterprise. That's a strategic an approach to delivering service. You know, how is that challenge, you know, in sort of getting that mindset and culture within GSA? I mean, it seems to me one of the things you got to focus on is you're talking about collective performance as an organization, as a measure, not, you know, when I was at GSA, there was a lot of like individual centers were measured. And so that there was no incentive like share work or, you know, if the, if somebody else is better at a particular capability, send again. And I'm talking about 20 years ago. So, in the dark ages. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we've called it moving from the me to the we. And literally, we've focused the last 5 or 6 years on this. And we're trying to take a bottom-up approach. And so as we put together our strategy, it's not coming from me and the PMO. I'm not imposing the strategy on the organization. What we're doing is we've created a number of strategic working groups, and they're composed of people from all of our client support centers, and they're led by the centers. Maybe one will be a director from Atlanta. Maybe one will be a FedSim director led. And so we've been working on different pieces of our strategy that way. And it takes a lot longer to do that. But ultimately, the product you get out of it is a lot better, and you're creating the buy-in to do that.
Sure.
We've also created all of our incentives and our measures in terms of focusing towards that enterprise approach. Now, each of our 12 client support centers, they still have their own P&L. So, you know, we want everybody to be focused on making sure you're operating as effectively as you can. We also do look at it, though, as an enterprise. And we found as we've worked closer and closer together that the centers are much more ready to shift projects amongst each other, even very sizable projects amongst each other. You know, recent examples with FedSim and Region 9 in San Francisco, FedSim has been able to shift some projects to Region 9. And I found out just very recently, Region 9 shifted a very large project back to FedSim. So it goes both right. ways. You build that trust over time.
Right. And I assume also you're sharing lessons learned and best practices across more effectively across the organization.
Yeah, and in fact, a lot of the acquisition innovations are being shared across those lines. And so if I could do a shout-out to our Region 3 in Philadelphia, they have an acquisition shop there that is particularly progressive and has been coming up with some great ideas, such as a comparative analysis technique that a number of locations have been using. And we get together regularly and share these lessons, and they become adopted throughout the enterprise.
Sure. And Chris, I want to talk about, and that's, you know, it's all part of your mission to deliver to, for the customer. Are you seeing any specific trends that we haven't talked about yet with regard to customer agency needs?
Obviously, there's a huge uptick in requirements for cybersecurity. The individual requirements coming out of DoD for the Cyber Command, the civilian CDM project, and then every single IT project that we have has an aspect of cyber. You can deliver those either with the operations or as an independent, you know, contract to do it. The suppliers for cyber are a little bit different than the traditional suppliers. So sometimes you're getting, you know, secondary contracts that work for it. But a huge uptick in cybersecurity along with the professional services work we've talked about.
Yeah, and it's baked into the requirement, right? Whether it's delivered as part as a secondary contract or as part of the initial contract. Is that what you're saying?
So every contract that, you know, we're operating has a cybersecurity component,
right.
But it when it's included as one of the tasks, it gets the amount of attention as one of the tasks.
Mm-hmm.
Last couple of years, it seems like we've started to lose a little bit of the cyber battle. And so getting new separate contracts to do the baseline enforcement of cybersecurity where you're and controlling the number of people on the network, controlling the information that's been on the network.
So
those things are happening outside
just focusing
specifically
on
for
that.
And then you've got on the application side, separate contracts to review all applications to get approval to operate and get through FedRAMP in order to get onto the networks.
What about mobility and just, you know, the people working from multiple locations? Is that something that
That's included in most of the projects. I think it really is agency specific on their environment. GSA tends to be one of the most progressive offices when it comes to everybody gets a laptop, everybody gets a mobile device. The systems are built for VPN and wireless access. It's based partly based on the official office environment where we, you know, all have book it desks rather than assigned desks. Yeah. But the IT functions follow that. And so once you get into environments that are cloud-based, it's a lot easier to execute mobility. So we'll be advocating anytime a requirement comes in, have you thought about not just the security side? Have you thought about mobility? Have you thought about where the information is hosted so that it can be delivered if you're going to access it via mobile device?
Right. And guys, we're already up on our last break. My guest today are Tom Howder. He is the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Assisted Acquisition Services. Chris Hamm, who is the Director of FedSIM within the Office of Assisted Acquisition Services. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some industry trends. We'll also talk about where things are going, the partnership with industry, and maybe a little bit, hopefully, on innovation. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Tom Howder. He is the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Assisted Acquisition Services at FAS and GSA, and Chris Hamm, who's the Director of FedSIM within AAS. And guys, we talk a lot about the customer needs and focuses, and what are you seeing on the flip side from your industry partners, you know, in terms of their what they're looking for, what they're providing, you know, just sort of trends? Either one.
So, in general, what we see is there's a song that my daughter sings all the time. It just says, "We don't talk anymore." And it seems like that's something that there's been a relationship.
Is your daughter a teenager?
She's 6 years old. She'll do a better rendition of the song than I do.
So she's still talking to you.
but it's this weird separation in communication between, you know, the people that supply, you know, and deliver the value for the government versus the government. There's this concept that you can't interact. That, you know, the at the very start of something, the FAR recommends that we do market research, which would mean going and talking to companies about how things get done in the commercial marketplace. For some reason, the government doesn't do that very well and doesn't interact with industry. So there's frustration because, you know, industry spends weeks and months trying to find access to be able to communicate with somebody, and we're very closed there. And then in the vendor selection process, because of the risk of protest and the impacts of protest, there's a lack of interaction with industry on most, you know, large contracts because they're just afraid of what would happen. And what it does is harms the overall system. You know, we're not buying innovative things, and we're not effectively communicating on why people weren't selected, and so the system just bogs itself down. And so in terms of innovation and what we're trying to do, one of our innovations is something that's entirely within the rules. Talk to industry. You know, have one-on-one meetings with industry when you're just making a buying decision and forming what your strategy is going to be. Yeah. When you do evaluations, have the industry partner be present. You know, do oral presentations to be able to interact with them. And then when you debrief them, give them meaningful information around why they weren't selected. That prevents any possibility of like a discovery-based protest. So there's small kind of innovation that just doing things the way, you know, the rules say you can do it now. There's larger innovation around trying to draw in new technology. So instead of having something hosted in a basement in a federal building, let's have it in the cloud. Mm-hmm. If you're, instead of doing waterfall development, let's do it in agile software development. And then if it's a new product, then look at alternative authorities. One of the projects that we're supporting is under the DIUX program for DOD. Mm-hmm. They're working directly with non-traditional vendors, giving them awards under other transactional authority. We're going to support them building a platform to be able to deliver that throughout the DoD. And you could see that extending to all GSA programs if that's a successful pilot. So anything that we can do that helps to drive new players and at a lower cost deliver value for the government, we're going to see if we can extend the ability to get into the government.
So in that regard, Tom, just and the, you know, Joe, Chris is preaching to the choir here to me with regard to government industry communication. You know, when you talk to your industry partners, are they, you know, pleased with what you guys are doing? Are they enthusiastic? Are you seeing the results from it?
Well, they're telling us they're pleased and they're enthusiastic about it. So we presume that they are,
and the customer too. It's a three-way conversation, right?
Yeah, and you know, and we reach out to industry in a whole variety of ways in addition to what Chris mentioned, and whether it's through the coalition or other organizations, whether it's for participating with the PMRs that Alliant Oasis do. And Chris has recently set up in FedSIM a similar mechanism that we hope to be rolling out to the larger AAS as well. So we're trying to foster good communications with industry because we do realize, as you mentioned, that it is a partnership. It's us, the client, and industry, and we can't do it without all three being in alignment.
And the best measure of that truly is industry advocating for AAS. If requirements aren't being met, saying, here's an alternative, and it bears out in all of the measures. Whenever we get our customer loyalty and our supplier scores and our employee viewpoints, we tend to end up on the higher end of the scale because people know what to expect. They know the process, and it is consistent and delivered on the way in which we said it was going to.
Yeah, and one of the, you know, when you talk about working with industry, one I wanted to ask you about is working with small businesses and what you're doing there.
Well, I think we're doing quite a bit with small business. Over the last 3 years, we've had about $4 billion worth of revenue that's gone to small businesses. So financially, of course, a lot is going there. We're also involved with some of the CBIR, the Small Business Innovation Research requirements, the phase three. That seems to be an emerging market for us. We're heavy users of Alliant SB and Oasis SB. And so it's a big part of our portfolio. As I mentioned at the beginning, we have a wide range of capabilities across our 12 client support centers, and not every one of our projects are the billion-dollar projects. We have a lot in the $5, $10, $20 million range, and to the extent that we can get those to small businesses, we do.
Right. Even at FedSim, where it's traditionally associated with large dollar projects,
yes,
a reasonable number of those projects are set aside for small business, where there are 100-plus million-dollar awards for small.
Yeah. They don't stay small.
No,
they don't
get
one of those real quick.
That's the problem. That's the problem every small business owner hopes to have.
Exactly. Yeah. Give me that problem, right? Yeah. Hey, so when you look at where things, I know it's, you're taking the strategic approach. What are you seeing in the future of the acquisition market? Where do you think things are headed?
Well, go ahead.
I would say, again, to reiterate what I said earlier, going towards the professional services, that's really where we see a big emerging niche for us.
It does seem that, you know, we're going to be in budget uncertainty. You know, there hasn't been a budget passed on October 1st in like decades.
Right.
And so
right.
There's going to be at some point like the distribution of funds and what we're going to be buying. No matter what, there's going to be uncertainty. That tends to yield more contracted out approaches where you have to have long-term plans. So I think in terms of AAS growth, that's going to end up being more AAS work throughout the civilian and DoD government.
Right. You know, one thing that I also wanted to ask you about, and just you have the customers who actually, the operational folks that use you understand the value, is part of your education process. It seems to me you probably have to reach out to the senior management and also the policymakers. And I'm just thinking about whether it's a waiver requirement or, like, I know in the FAR there's a requirement you got to do this best acquisition method to meet your needs kind of determinations. How do those things work for you guys?
Well, slowly, unfortunately, especially with our DoD clients, we're finding that it can take months or even up to a year before we can get some of those waivers.
That's really approval to use you.
Just
guys,
to I'm use sure. us. Yeah, yeah just yeah. to come out and actually use us. And then the real work begins after that. But if there was a way, there was a mechanism that we could find to streamline that process a little bit. We certainly don't begrudge them for having a waiver process. I think we offer a really great product, and it'll stand up to that level of review. But you think about the impact it has on the client. When we lose several months or a year of time that we could be spending on that acquisition, it really does have a real-world impact upon that end client.
Right. So I don't get to change regulations, but
yeah, sure,
I get to advocate.
Sure.
So this is in FAR 17.
Yeah.
And academically, it makes sense. You know, if you have an assigned contracting activity to do your work, you should use that contracting activity. I mean, right. I have that internally. And if somebody wanted to not use, you know, in my own one, I would say, hey, tell me.
Right.
And so the process for getting a waiver to go outside makes sense. It should be time limited. Because if the contract maybe is saying, we're going to do your work, and then, oops, we're not, when you're 2 months out or 1 month out from the end of a contract, you're forcing the government to enter into a unfortunate contractual arrangement. You're going to do a sole source contract where you have no pricing leverage with a company. And so the waiver actually creates very, very bad contractual relationship with the suppliers, where we get worse pricing. Yeah. So there should be, you have to get a waiver if it's within X months of the date, and then outside of that, then you have the permission to go find support, however.
Or maybe that's the concept of you have a good housekeeping seal of approval, so the waiver process is expedited, or, you know, because ultimately, right, you're right from an intellectual sort of ivory tower approach. Yeah, making sure you're making a good business decision. Everybody wants everybody to do that. Nobody's going to begrudge anybody that. But, you know, performance over time, you know, a good business decision made too late is not, you know, doesn't serve anybody's interest, right?
So, yeah, and it has no connection to the services being delivered. So if it takes an extra year to get the contract that you're actually earning, what did you cost in terms of outcomes?
Yeah, sure. So we got about a minute and a half left. I want to ask you guys real quick, like, you know, I think Chris, you said earlier, nobody goes to college to be a procurement professional, right? I didn't go to college or law school to do what I do. You know, I just ended up here. You know, can you give just a little sense of how you got into this business and a little bit of your background?
For me, it was just sheer blind luck, quite honestly.
I would agree. It's a great career.
I was in grad school and I ran out of money, and so I went to the office that was in charge of co-op programs, and I said, "Who's got an opening?" And they said, "Well, GSA has one." Okay. So I went down there, and suddenly, with my background in history, I was in a telecommunications office where I worked for a long period of time. But I've been all over different parts of GSA for 30 years now. Can't imagine working anywhere else. I just absolutely love it there.
Yeah, Chris.
So I applied for the Presidential Management Internship, now the PMF, and there was a book of jobs, and I took the GSA and the Bureau of Prisons sections, and I ripped them out and threw them away, because I was going to go work for the State Department or the FBI,
fancy stuff, do something
important.
Yeah.
But there was somebody from FedSim at the job fair that said, no, you could come and be the person who develops the AmeriCorps website. Right. Well, I got a background in coding, and that'd be great. And so, you know, at 23, I was in charge of a $100 million program to, you know, do AmeriCorps and build their website. And for the last, you know, 18 years, there's a new something that I don't know about that, you know, I feel lucky to be in the room with General X or CIO Y, where I'm helping to solve like a data center outsourcing move for North Carolina and EPA. I can't believe that they're trusting me to be the person that does this. And at GSA, you generally have that exposure government-wide.
Right. And thank you guys. Your examples of, and just in general, just a statement that procurement system touches every aspect of government, the government's mission in serving the American people. Every aspect. It's a strategic imperative to do it well. And FedSim and AAS, you guys do it very well. AAS and FedSim, you guys do it very, very well. So, thank you for being on the show. My guest today has been Tom Howder. He is the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Assisted Acquisition Services at FAS, and Chris Hamm, who is the Director of FedSim within the Office of Assisted Acquisition Services. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.